Greetings, ladies and gentlemen. You are listening to the Castobrus podcast with a K, available on castobrus.com, iTunes, Stitcher.com, and Audio Boo. Hello, with me this week is James McLean. How are you, James?
Fine, thank you.
Excellent. I'm Christian Corley, editor of Castobrus, and this is Castobrus podcast with a K. Let's go straight into it. Big Finish have been sneaky. I don't know why, but they've been sneaky and underhand and nasty and really, really pleasing and kind and generous, actually. Not nasty. It's the nice kind of underhand, isn't it? It's the surprising kind. It's the kind of underhand that your parents are at Christmas when you're a small child. And they've released their 50th anniversary story, The Light at the End Early.
Right.
Which stars doctors.
It does.
It's got lots of doctors in it. There are five doctors that you know who are in it, I suspect.
Dr. Kildare.
He's not one of them.
Dr. Carl Kennedy.
No, he's not one of them either.
No, you've got to have Dr. Carl Kennedy.
Nor is Dr. Bunsen Honeydew, he's not in it either. No.
I'm sorry, Big Finish, but this is getting more disappointing by the second.
Tom Baker, Peter Davison, Colin Baker, Sylvester McCoy, and the great Paul McGann are in there with various companions, such as Nicola Bryant, India Fisher, Louise Jameson, Sophie Aldred, and Sarah Sutton. You get the picture, and there's other people in there. The Master's in there. Mm-hmm. There are other people.
Beavers,
he is indeed, yeah. Jeffrey Beavers is in there as Master. I'm not going to tell you anything else.
No, I think that's
other
quite
than
nice.
That he turned up in Midsummer the other day as a news presenter. But that's another matter entirely. So, Big Finish have done it. They've brought out the Doctor Who's 50th anniversary celebration. It's a bit of an epic, actually. Early, a month early. I don't know why they would do that. I'm pleased that they have. How do you feel about it?
Well, to be honest, it's funny because I was just the other day, I think like a day ago or so, considering it.
Right.
And I don't normally consider, the only things I normally get from Big Finish are sort of very classic stuff.
Yeah.
But, and I'm afraid it was actually a shot on Big Finish of William Russell holding the book, the collector's edition tomb.
Right.
Not a book. And tomb again is a book, so not a tomb either, but a package.
Sure.
He was holding, and that sort of got me thinking, oh yeah, I might be quite tempted to actually, yeah, because it's the 50th, and I don't think I'm actually going to particularly buy anything 50th related this year. Mm-hmm. I mean, I know you don't, because you just get all the stuff sent to you.
I do tend to give a lot of it away, though.
You do, that is true. That is very magnanimous of you. I've got copious amounts of stuff that you've given me. Oh, no, you haven't. I get nothing. I get zero. I get the zilch. No, it's fine. So yeah, I am actually genuinely tempted because, and I'm still umming and ahhing whether to quickly rush and try and get the limited edition still while it's still available, which is quite expensive to be fair, but there's a fair bit with it. I mean, you get, there's a bonus Companion Chronicles with William Russell on there as well.
Yeah.
And you get the actual play, and then you get two behind the scenes things. That's quite tempting. Although there's the cheap part of me just thinking, oh, I could just download it from Big Finish for £20. I can't work out which, but either way, to have someone like me, a miser like me, actually considering to actually purchase something which is brand new rather than waiting for things to go down in price, that's shows how big it is. And I like the idea of having them all together. I mean, we haven't had them all together. We haven't had Baker and McCoy on one yet, have we? We haven't had Baker and any of them on them.
We haven't had Baker and any of them. I mean, I haven't listened to the whole thing yet, but what I have listened to, Tom Baker and Paul McGann are rather good together.
That's good. I mean, I think in a sense, that's probably the most exciting thing about it. And as we've said in previous podcasts, the beautiful thing about Big Finish is that you can't think of many franchises where you'd have so many of the older actors, you know, from days gone by,
yeah,
actually coming back to reestablish their roles.
Absolutely.
You know, I think it's brilliant, and it's wonderful, and it is as canon as it can get, really.
Well, I'll tell you what. Whilst we're on the topic of celebrations, we'll steer clear of the Day of the Doctor for now, because I suspect we're going to maybe talking about it for a while.
Yes, until we're bored stupid of it, I imagine.
And I mean, I'm going to the pictures to see it, I've decided.
Oh, you have?
Yeah, I think the pictures is it. I'm not let's just say there was talk of going to London, but that's out the door now. And Manchester was going to be a promising thing. We'll come to Manchester shortly. But I think just it's going to be the cinema. I mean, you don't get to see Doctor at the cinema very often, do you?
No, I know. But, I mean, if you could promise me I'd go to the cinema and there would be no one else there.
Yes, I sympathise.
I really cannot think of a worse fate than having to be stuck in a cinema with a whole load of Doctor Who fans, eagerly excited to the point, and probably many going over the brink of flatulence. You just don't want it. It's just a horrible thought.
Well, hopefully it'll be as good an experience as in with Neil.
Especially with children, unless there's a very
late...
Well,
it's on at 7:45, so I don't think the youngish, the very young ones won't be there, I don't think. I think we'll be looking...
They should be strapped in their Daleks, so they shouldn't be.
Indeed. Well, as I say, moving away from that, A More Worlds and Adventure in Space and Time, have you seen the Doctor Who magazine's confirmation of William Russell and Carol Ann Ford being in it?
No, I didn't. Yes. Now, as I've just said earlier, and if you're not a follower of this podcast, you'll know from being a follower of this particular podcast that I do like my William Russell stuff. So that is very exciting.
Indeed.
For a second, my brain suddenly thought that Jacqueline Hill would be in there as well. And then not only did it think that was a crass thing to even...
I think that's possible. I think you've been fooled by the quality of the production photos.
The production is very good. It looks very good. And I'm very impressed. I'm still a little... You know, the one thing I do share in the genes with our colleague overseas, Brian, is a specific pendant nature for props. And I'm still not totally happy with the colour blue of the police box.
Right.
But aside from that, I think they've done a pretty bang on job, haven't
they? We've got William Russell's playing a character called Harry, and Carol Ann Ford is a character called Joyce. They sound like incidental. I mean, they're bound to be little cameos, aren't they? Although Harry has got sort of like... man in brown overalls written all over him, frankly. But
do you think Harry's going to be a caretaker? Or janitor?
Yeah, something like
switches
that.
Switches off the lights at the end. I'd love it if he switched off the lights, and as he was doing it, the radio started to play that Beatles track, and he starts to do his little dance. Maybe takes off the janitor top, and he's got that lovely stripe number from The Chase.
There's another one as well, which I'd missed. I don't know if this was... somehow I'd missed this. Mark Eden is in it. As Donald Bavistock, Matt Eden was, of course, help me out here.
I can't, because I don't know who you're talking about.
Mark Eden was in Marco Polo.
Oh, right. Yes, of course. As people will know from this podcast and previous, and if you've not listened to the whole of this podcast in the last 10 minutes, if you've listened to the last 5 minutes, you will know that I'm a big fan of the classics. So I should have known that. But that's awesome.
Yeah. Also, Mark Eden is more well-known, perhaps, in popular culture for playing Bradley in Coronation Street, who tried to kill Rita.
Oh, I know him more for that than... he got knocked over by a tram.
Knocked over by a tram in Blackpool, that's right.
That was everybody bizarre. I find it annoying that I remember Bradley, but I never remember William Russell's character, which followed, I think.
Oh, yeah, he was Mr. Sullivan.
He was linked to Rita.
He's the one who left her all the money, that's why she's now rich.
Right, yeah.
And Nicholas Briggs is in there as well as Peter Hawkins, voice of the Daleks. So
he doesn't stop, does he?
Well, there's he's not much like acting required in there, I don't think.
He's like some Dalek slut, the way he goes around the place, sort of just getting into bed with everyone's voices and Dalek faces. No stopping.
Well,
him.
You know, I was rewatching Asylum of the Daleks recently, the beginning of it mainly just to see the quality of the DVD.
Yeah.
And Darla Von Carlson, she's a bit of a dirty girl, if you ask me. Well, that's only my opinion, obviously.
Yes.
Canon. Light at the end. Yes, I'm looking forward to An Adventure in Space and Time very much so. Manchester is a town in the north of England, the northwest of England, not the northeast. That's a different place altogether. And they have our good friend Gareth Cavanagh is involved in organising and producing a madness of Doctor Who related things taking place in Manchester, kicking off in early November, on the 16th of November. Now, obviously, there's lots of things going on with Doctor Who around the country. And their whole Who at 50 thing, which takes place at the Lasso Gallery, Fab Cafe, and a few other places, has something for everyone. But, as I say, there's a lot going on. So if you are interested in going into Manchester and having a look at this, we've got a page on Casterbris, so I'll obviously link to it in the Casterbris podcast with a K show notes. But perhaps the 17th of November is perhaps the day that you want. Wireless Hussain will be there.
Oh,
and there'll be a live restaging of An Unearthly Child with Phil Dennison as the Doctor. You will see the images and you'll be able to have a read through everything that's going on. Last of Gary has a long, I say long history. They have a good history of staging Doctor Who as plays. They've done Midnight, which I saw, which was absolutely marvellous. And they've done Robots of Death so far. This is good to see that they're doing this as well. And there's lots of other things going on there. It all looks very, very interesting. I hope to go there myself. But if I don't, you listener, go for me.
Yeah, I was half tempted to actually take the flight up there. I think I'm at Collectomania that weekend.
Right. Where's that?
That's in Milton Keynes.
Right.
I think my good friend Lance Henriksen might be down there, so I'm going over
and
to go
catch
him.
How much do you know Lance Henriksen, the movie and TV actor?
I know him through work I did on, I still do, with sort of Millennium, and so I got to know him a while ago, and he's a lovely guy who I've stayed in touch with ever since and sort of catch him whenever I can.
You should maybe work on a book or some sort.
We have actually talked about it.
Have you?
Yeah, we have. We have actually talked about it. And I still, in the last, when I spoke to him last week, he was still telling me to sort it out, and still mulling ideas. So we do all sort of weird stuff. And he was part of our Back to Frank Black book we did as well. He's a lovely guy. Yeah. He really is down to earth. I have once said to him he should be in Doctor Who, and he didn't know what it was, so that sort of killed that chance.
What's this Back to Frank Black book anyway, James?
Okay, I'll just very. I think you're being very kind to give us a very little leak plug-in. Back to Frank Black. The book is about Millennium, which was a TV show that started in 1996 by the same person who made The X-Files, which starred Lance Henriksen as a criminal profiler. It was dubbed Serial Killer of the Week at the time, an absurd idea, which of course now is even more absurd because Serial Killer of the Week is pretty much everything that FX outputs. Very good show, had a strong influence on the industry, and a lot of people really liked it. It was a little niche. The book is a culmination of writers, journalists, authors, fans, cast and crew all come together to do this big companion book on it. Profits from the book all go to charity, which is Children of the Night, which is a US charity to try and get kids out of child prostitution, which is one of Lance's chosen charities. And that's where the profits will go from the book. And it's just come out now on Kindle and Kindle apps. So that is the book that we are referring to. It is nothing to do with Doctor Who. I could probably try and find some tenuous links if you'd like. But
I don't think there's any need to, but I'm pretty sure we can put a link to it in the podcast for our dear listeners.
Yes, it's a good book. It's about 500 odd pages. I've got a chapter in there, and I did the internal illustrations as well. I don't know how we got onto this topic, but it's a good topic because it's, as I say, it's got a good end to it.
Excellent. Now then, one thing I would recommend you do is sort out your author page on Amazon.
Mine?
Yes. If you're an author, if you're a contributor to the book, you'll be able to have an author page on Amazon.
I should really, yes, yeah. I should. I mean, I should.
I say that because it's something I've been doing this morning. But let's move on from that and back to Doctor Who and the suggestion that there may be more missing episodes.
Yes.
Yes.
Well, we had a feeling this was going to rear its head sooner or later.
Didn't we indeed? Yes. I'm going to be careful how I put this.
Yeah.
We were led to believe that there may be other things going on. And Doctor Who Archive, which is a fantastic little website, who we'll be coming back to a little bit later, actually. They recently spoke to Dick Fiddy of the British Film Institute. Mm-hmm. BFI have one or two events every year called Missing Believed Wipes, at which lost TV and movies are played either in part or in their entirety for the assembled audience, and then the story of how they've been discovered and anything else that's relevant is discussed, perhaps with people that were involved. Now, Dick Fiddy has been asked if there's any more Doctor Who, and if, or more specifically, if any is likely to be at the next Missing Believed Wiped event. Now, it would be unlikely, let's get this out of the way first, that they would play anything that has already been released. Usually the BFI premiere stuff that has been rediscovered. So, Mr. Fiddy said, we're awaiting word from the BBC as to which episode will be made available, and that won't be known until mid-November time, I suspect.
Right.
Now, he doesn't specifically say what episode or whether it's something that already exists or not. But as we said previously, BFI has been given first dibs with things like the Galaxy 4 episode, for instance. Mm-hmm. So it would be unusual if they were to be playing an episode from The Enemy of the World or The Web of Fear, unless it happens to be episode 3 of The Web of Fear, which we don't know, do we? We'll have to
think, unless something has happened which they weren't expecting, I would say it's unlikely, because they would be in a bit of... there'd be a few angry iTunes fans if that was the case. But yes, do continue.
Absolutely. So, that's very interesting, because it might be Marco Polo. It might not be Marco Polo, but Marco Polo is a title that has been bandied around since this all kicked off.
Mm-hmm.
All started, you know, rumbling many, 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 many months ago. So that would be... very interesting. We will wait and see what happens with that. You know, the whole story, which I think we might as well go on to now, behind the missing episodes, is very interesting in itself. So what I would say to you, dear listener, is to... Actually, it's what Mr. Morris himself said in a very... And here's a cultural reference for you. In a very Terrorhawks kind of a way, expect the unexpected.
Mm.
Because it might be that.
It might be. But of course, we have to say that even if it is, there's no guarantee that it is the full story.
Well, indeed. It might be a clip.
I mean...
might be a still.
Well, I was kind of suggesting that given that we've got...
It might get released as a GIF. It's that short.
Well, yes, it could be a GIF, or what I was perhaps more seriously trying to go for was, like, you know, a couple of episodes. I mean,
yeah.
Web of Fear, where you're still obviously missing one. So, but I mean... either way, I mean, from a historical aspect, it's exciting. From a fan aspect, it's quite exciting. And from a McLeanax aspect, it's very enriching, because I've said many times on this podcast that I reckon there would still be, and this was before the rumours came out, that I poo-pooed all the naysayers on the DVD documentaries and all of them saying there'd be nothing to be found, like they said in 93 and then 98 and stuff appears. There's always room for more stuff to appear, so I think I'm vindicated.
I'm happy about that. I'm glad you feel vindicated.
Yeah.
Okay. So, missing episodes. You should, by now, be aware of the name Philip Morris. Are you, James?
I am, yes.
He's the... I'm not sure what... I suppose... you don't often get the chance to describe someone like this, but I think it's fair enough to describe Philip Morris as a maverick.
Right.
He's the maverick archivist or discoverer, or whatever you want to call him, who was at the very least the driving force and at the most the man who went and did all the dirty work and put his life at risk to find missing episodes of Doctor Who. Something that hasn't really...
it sounds quite mavericky, because it sounds like the sort of thing where, you know, like in the 80s cop films, the chief archivist would be saying, Morris, you can't go there. You're off the case. You can't take me off the case, Gov. I'm almost on it. Then he blows
caution
to the wind.
Then he gets suspended and goes anywhere.
Yes, exactly. Because, you know, he's like that. He rides close to the edge, breaks a few rules, but he takes no prisoners. And that's what he's done, obviously.
Yeah.
A film could be made. The archivist.
I think a film should be made.
I think a film probably will be made.
At the very least, a documentary.
Or a Gareth Cavana play.
I'd be disappointed if there wasn't one of those.
Absolutely.
Completely and utterly. Okay, so... now, there is... I would suggest that you head to the link that we've got listed in this podcast and read up on the intricacies and the very small details about this. Philip Morris was kidnapped in 2005, 2006 sort of time, whilst working on an oil rig off the coast of Africa. And it seems, whether or not this is directly the case or not, after the Nigerian president made a payment of a ransom, allegedly, Morrison's co-workers were released. And this, whether or not this is, I mean, this is in the papers. You can check this on the BBC website as a historical.
We'll drop a link, won't we?
We will drop a link, yes.
Yeah.
Whether or not this is an actual, you know, this is what started it off, or whether it was related to this that started it off, whether there was a moment when he was like, you know, I don't want to do this for a living anymore, which would be perfectly reasonable, even though he says that the people that kidnapped him were reasonably polite. You know, his life took a different direction on that date, and that's brought us to where we are now, where we're discussing missing episodes that have been recovered by someone who's pretty much new to the whole issue of missing episodes, who wasn't like someone who worked for the BBC, who wasn't employed by the BBC under any auspice. And then he went online and spoke to people who were, and I'm not going to pass judgment on any of the responses that they gave at the time. You can look them up for yourself. And then off he went, basically, encouraged by a few people like Ian Levine. He went off, and then here we are 8 years later with missing episodes recovered. Now, you've read through the article, haven't you, on the .2 archive website. Was there anything that struck you about this? You know, did it feel to you that not everything had been done that could have been done prior to Philip Morris getting involved?
I don't know. I find the whole story, it's to do with Doctor Who, and that in itself makes me a little careful, because there's a lot of people out there, there's a lot of people who are either involved or have an opinion or mm-hmm. are related to the issue. When you've got someone as well who has gone through kidnapping and the likes and moved on, and he's done some very positive things, somehow, I don't know, I find the whole tale so extraordinary. I feel almost uncomfortable to comment on it in a weird way.
Mm-hmm.
That it's just so, it's very, I think in part because it's so, kind, because we had on our last week, someone replied to us and sort of said we should really be covering this. And mm-hmm. I sort of kind of feel like I don't really know how to really approach it without either trivializing certain aspects or upsetting other people, or, you know, becoming tabloid, because I really have very little idea apart from what I see on these news pages of what went on and how it all sort of came together. I mean, I still can't believe it, if I was quite frank about it. This to me is as absurd as the Peter Cushing thing last year,
yeah.
You know, where they suddenly found bits of Peter Cushing, and suddenly this guy does what everyone else in the archiving and Doctor Who searching industry had said would be impossible to ever do, you know, and that was it. And suddenly he comes back with more than, you know, you'd expect maybe a couple of clips or something, but to actually bring back whole episodes, it's, I don't know, it just feels like a hot potato in so many aspects.
It is a hot potato. Well, let's just refer back to DoctorWhoArchive.com. By the summer of 2007, research had been carried out into the possibility of finding missing episodes in Africa, lines of communication being opened with the relevant stations throughout the continent, and around this time into late 2007, early 2008, possibly coinciding with Phil Morris's early trips and also possibly using some of his compensation money, which we assume would come from what happened to him while working on the oil rig. TIEA was funded. That was founded, beg your pardon. Project Africa was a jointly sponsored BFI and BBC project, the team acting as agents for both and looking for any and all missing material. So clearly he's used some local knowledge that he'd gained whilst working in Africa, Nigeria. And as we learned from his interview with the BBC, a lot of these tapes weren't supposed to have been in Africa, or if they were supposed to be in Africa, they weren't supposed to have been in the country that they were found in.
Yeah.
It seems to me, and I think it's a fair assumption to make, that the majority of research prior to this have been very strictly by the book, and by which I mean people who had been tasked with finding these episodes, or whether they've been doing it off their own back or whatever, say, like in Levine, weren't aware, perhaps, of the this bicycling process, and basically went by the documentation that the BBC had, checked, made phone calls, found whether things were there or not, found that they weren't there, wrote them off as being deleted or whatever, wiped, trashed, whatever you want to call them, where in actual fact they'd been moved on to another TV station or another TV station in another country.
Mm. I mean, it could, a lot of it, just be simply money. But, you know, there's a mixture when you're doing these sort of things where you're having to sort of, as you say, follow trails.
Mm.
It requires obviously two things. It requires three things. Experience. It requires understanding on a local level, and it also requires cash.
Yeah.
But it requires financing.
Yes. Yes.
And maybe beforehand, you know, just the way things were, and it also probably requires a little bit of luck. That these things hadn't sort of measured up, and in this circumstance, they had those things in different quantities than what they would normally have through, as you say, especially if they went through usual channels.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Well, I mean, that's basically what happened. Trent Morris, something happened to him personally and professionally, which appears to have changed his viewpoint on. Certainly, it's inspired him to do something different. Work-wise, and this is the result. We've got missing episodes, we've got Project Africa, we've got The Enemy of the World, we've got The Web of Fear, we've got things that aren't Doctor Who, by the look of things, which also might be what we get at the BFI later this year. And we're here talking about it now, and people are buying these episodes on iTunes and looking forward to the DVDs coming out, which are all very, very exciting.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to get too deep into this article, because it's 3 pages long, and you know how we have quite long features on Casterbus?
Mm-hmm.
Well, this is probably about the length of one of our longer features. You, dear listeners, should head off and read through the whole thing yourself, and you will find out quite a few things, basically.
I think that's the best way to do it, because in the end, as you say, this is a sort of very topical. There's a lot of people, you know, involved in it, and. As I say, there's various rumours and comments that we've all been privy to. I don't know. It just feels like something which is best to sort of look into in your own way and just appreciate the outcome. I don't know. It's a funny thing, this. It really is. It's just so weird. It's just weird. I haven't read the whole article, so I am actually. I'll hands up on that.
You naughty boy. Well... Listen, it is a film. It's a film in the making. It's a play in the making. It demands to be made, Gareth Cavanagh. So let us move on, James McLean. I come to you because Brian's not here this week.
Yeah.
He's off filming one of his fan films, dear listener.
As always, yeah.
Yeah. We don't know what props are involved. We would tell you if we knew. Do you have any recommendations this week, James?
I do.
Oh, good.
Well, I have two interesting points. They're recommendations. Today is my birthday. So
is it?
It is. Yeah.
Well, happy birthday. I'm sure your life is much more fulfilled now I've said that to you. But
it is absolutely. Anyway. I thought I'd tell you earlier, but I thought it'd be more genuine if I if I'd let you have the surprise on screen. But
on screen.
What I would on screen
what?
On my screen? Well, you're on my screen.
Oh, right, okay.
A picture of you looking very stern.
I don't think I am.
You do on my Skype window. You look quite stern indeed.
Do I?
You do.
Sure.
You do. You okay. Big thick glasses, looking downwards.
I'm signing an autograph.
No, oh, you.
I've
you're signing an autograph.
I am actually signing an autograph at a book signing. Yes. Ultimate Regeneration. Yeah.
That's it. Those large crayons are hard to handle, aren't they?
They are. Yeah.
But what I was going to say, dear listener, was as well. My link to this is actually two relevant points. One is that my birthday is shared with Matt Smith, so it's Matt Smith's birthday today.
Can I just stop you there?
Yeah.
Right. Dear listener, I have absolutely no problem with it being Matt Smith's birthday. You can wish Matt Smith happy birthday as much as you like, but I absolutely do not want to get involved in the whole saying happy birthday to people who may or may not have been involved with Doctor Who at any point in their lives.
Right, because that's going to make you sound really irresponsible and rude and callous, because my next point is actually it is the birthday of Ian Marta as well, who actually died on the same day. So you want to stand there pious with your whole I don't deal with birthdays, that's fine. The rest of us will have we'll just say a very sad sort of happy birthday to one of the greatest male lead actors that the show had outside the Doctors. So you okay there, Christian? Sorry, I let you bumble into that trap. But apparently, yes, it's Ian Marta's birthday as well, and he passed away in 86 on the same day as his birthday.
Diabetes, wasn't it?
Yes. But yes, so I did think at the same time it's history, and it's odd because there's not much that the 28th of October really shares dates with, and it's kind of weird that it shares with Ian Marta, Matt Smith, me, of course, and Mussolini's March on Rome. So it's a very, very special day. I will say, in difference to, well, Matt Smith, you know, age before beauty. Well, some might argue differently, but I certainly would, that he shares my birthday rather than I share his birthday.
Sure.
Of course, if we did it by on priorities of fame, popularity, success, positive hopes for the future, I'm sure, yes, I would probably still be now. I don't think many people would argue with that. But anyway, it's a birthday day, so celebrate it in any way you like.
You know, and I do notice when Brian's not here, you do talk a lot more.
I do, yeah. Well, he breaks it up.
Okay, so what are your actual recommendations anyway?
I don't have any.
Okay.
I genuinely don't actually. I was thinking this earlier. I don't think I've watched any Doctor Who this week. Though I know for my birthday, I have sitting downstairs two cheap Doctor Who DVDs. I think The Demons.
Do you know what? I thought you were going to say BBVs then.
BBVs.
That's blooming. Yeah, that's,
wow, that's a bit of back
fandom. That.
Retro.
Yeah.
Retro. It's not a Shakedown. Was Shakedown BBV?
Yeah,
it?
I think so.
The Demons, and I'm trying to remember what the other one is. I think it might be Nightmare of Eden.
Right.
Just because they're both cheap, and I've never.
Like Nightmare of Eden.
I just kind of like. I never particularly liked it when I saw
on
it.
Eden.
Now I've seen it before. When I rewatch it on DVD, I think I'm probably going to enjoy it more because your expectations are as of what it is.
Well, my expectations were never more than remembering it very, very, very vaguely. When I
think I always get mixed up. I used to get mixed up with that with. God, what's the name of the terrible labyrinth one?
That's a Nimon.
Yeah, right. The Nimon. And because they've got the similar production value, same season, same cast, I get them mixed up in my head. And of course, Nimon to me is the dire story. And I think poor old Nightmare of Eden gets tugged down.
Nightmare of Eden's got some very, very clever concepts in it.
It has. I think, unfortunately, it shares the same sort of opening where the TARDIS sort of links on to another.
Yeah.
As I recall, which is probably why I get the two mixed up.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah. Okay. So I've got those to look forward to. So I recommend you try those.
Okay. Well, they're good recommendations. My recommendation might redeem me slightly on the Ian Marta issue.
Good.
Genesis of the Daleks.
Ay.
Which I've been watching recently as part of the Monsters collection, actually, on the Davros discs, which the reviews for which need to be finished off and published on Casterbury's. And he doesn't take a particularly lead role in this as he does in some others that he's in.
No.
He doesn't get many scenes on his own, but he's as reliable and square-jawed as ever.
I suppose, to be fair, with Genesis of the Daleks, none of the leads really take.
Well, no, they don't. There's only one person starring in Genesis of the Daleks, isn't there?
That's interesting, isn't it? Because it's a sort of story that you would get in the New Adventures sort of era, you know, the books, where the story leads and everyone else plays to the momentum of that story. Because in a sort of sense, the beauty of Genesis of the Daleks is, regardless of whether the Doctor's there or not, it feels like it doesn't matter in a weird way because the drama is there between Davros, his people, and the Thals.
Yeah.
The fact that the Doctor gets involved somehow feels almost incidental. So, yeah, I agree. It's a great one. And Ian Marta's a very sad situation. And I'm sorry if I'm going to go on again, but you know, we talked about Big Finish earlier, and it's so nice to have all the actors come back. It's a real shame, isn't it, that he's one of the actors who'd be wonderful to have had come back and do another more of Doctor Who. And he loved Doctor Who, and he worked on Doctor Who afterwards in various ways with the novelizations he did and the original novelization. And unfortunately, we can't get him back, which is a great shame.
It is a shame. Whenever I watch Genesis, mm-hmm. It always leads me to draw comparisons with the other Davros actors.
Yeah.
It's clearly, as we discussed, I think it was last week or the week before, Michael Wisher was an accomplished character actor. And, you know, he made various appearances in Doctor Who, and you wouldn't be able to pick him out across any of them if you didn't know mm-hmm. who he
yes,
was.
Yes, definitely, yeah.
And you've then got David Goodison's, which is along the similar sort of lines. And then you get to Terry Molloy, which is, he starts becoming a bit unhinged in terms of performance.
Yes.
But then if you try to watch Genesis of the Daleks, it's quite clear to anyone watching Genesis of the Daleks that Davros is already unhinged.
Yes.
So it could be argued that although Terry Molloy has played Davros more than any other, his performance is more of a caricature in some ways.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. Although you could argue within continuity. I mean, you get... I'll put Davros in the same category, and I'm sure all our listener will remember this, Boy Meets World, which was an American TV sitcom, which dealt with a small child growing up. It was hilarious if you were 13. But there was one character in it, played by Will Friedle, who went on to do the voice of Terry McGinnis in Batman Beyond. His character was a slightly inane brother. Then after one season, they rewrite him, and he's utterly... sort of almost like Monty Python off the wall. He's a character which just changes the whole show because he's just nonsensical. But you can almost say in the fiction, it happens after he's forced to sleep in Mr. Feeney's car, the head teacher's car, for between the seasons. And suddenly after that, he comes back. So you almost like that instance of being left homeless just drove him insane. With Davros, I like to think him being stuck in cryogenics for so long in a sort of I can't remember if it's in the show or it's in Big Finish, they describe as a waking nightmare. Mm-hmm. I think it's in the show, it actually says that he was sentient through that time, he's frozen after Destiny.
Right.
That just drives him, you know, utterly insane.
Yeah.
And to a point where he becomes, as you say, a caricature. But at the same time, there is no doubt that he doesn't carry the subtleties of he no longer feels like a scientist, does he? He feels like a supervillain.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's a master.
Yeah. Yeah, supervillain.
A master supervillain. But I still love Terry Molloy's version. I think he's great. I love his interplay with McCoy in Remembrance. Yeah. And he's great against Colin Baker.
Yes.
And he's even great against Davison. Pivotal scene where Davison can't shoot him.
I don't think there's anything wrong with him at all. I just there's this new aspect to Davros where he turns into a cackling monster. Where you kind of feel that it's almost like how the Master in Destiny of the Doctors describes the Fourth Doctor of him taking leave of his senses.
Yeah, I mean, you could almost argue, I mean, if we go back to the Nazi parallels, you say take Hitler, there's a very difference between Hitler as this force in the 20s with a whole load of similar-minded people trying to push forward a new ideology to Hitler the leader. And you could perhaps argue with Davros. Davros is a scientist in Genesis. Mm. But by the time Destiny has come and he sees his Daleks as a realization, he starts to take on the mantle of leader, supreme being. He starts to believe.
Yeah.
His ideology changes as his realization is... becomes manifest, and from being a scientist he becomes a leader. But I know what you mean, it's very interesting, and I know we're waffling on this now.
I think we need to dedicate a podcast to Davros.
Absolutely. I
need the Davros cast.
Absolutely. I don't think any of the Davroses are bad, actually.
I
mean, I think it's a shame in Destiny that they give him the same mask, which doesn't quite fit.
Yeah,
but aside from that, interesting one. Yeah, Genesis, brilliant.
Yeah, excellent. Right, I'm glad I got away with that then.
Oh, one thing I would like to say.
Yeah.
Just very quickly, I was thinking the other day. I was sitting in bed thinking, as I do, drinking my cup of coffee.
Mm-hmm.
I've had a gingerbread brick biscuit as well.
Lovely.
And I was thinking.
Just before or after your mum tucked you in?
I don't know how to respond to that. It's my birthday. I'm 38 years old. My mum doesn't tuck me in. Good Lord.
Anyway.
Things, I was going to sort of wander off into really horrid stuff then. I sometimes have to rein myself in. What I was going to say, I was thinking, I really miss the, did you ever have the 25th anniversary album, the Kevin McCulloch album?
The LP?
It was a cassette at the time for me.
Right, no, I don't, unfortunately.
Not the Variations on Time, but there was one which was basically taking out excerpts of his work through pretty much the 25th season, I think it was. Was it the 26th? It might be the 26th. 25th and 26th, I think it was. And it was really, really good. And yeah, I know you can actually find bits of it on YouTube. But what annoys me is that I don't want to find bits on YouTube. I would actually like to purchase it. And it's not out. It's not there anywhere. Right. And it's really surprised because it's, you know, people knock the sort of way that Kevin McCulloch and the electronic music went in McCoy's era. And yeah, some of it is a bit crass and the use of orchestral hit shots throughout is a bit, you know, dated. But there were some really good tunes in there, especially if you heard it in this raw form. And, you know, if anyone out there is listening to this, dear listener, who has any relevance to any of the... To distribution or of material like that, or Kevin's listening, God's sake, get it out there. It was really good. I'd like to recommend that in our recommendations because it was a really good album. There's some lovely stuff from Happiness Patrol, Remembrance of the Daleks, you may find this amazing, but Time in the Rani had some really good melodies in there.
Sorry, did you just say Time in the Rani?
I know.
And good in the same sentence.
I know. Great Time spot. Of the Rani. It did, and they are really some really good bits in there. He did some great work in Time with the Rani. It's to say, it's just a great pity the rest doesn't hold up to it. So in fact, you know, if you've not bought Time with the Rani, it's a good excuse to, just simply for his musical cues. And if you're embarrassed about owning Time with the Rani, you can say, hey, I bought it simply because I appreciate.
Is your nice latest score on the DVD?
I don't know because I haven't actually bought it. Thank you for bringing that up. First, you bring up the fact that my mother may or may not have to tuck me in at night. And now you bring up the fact that I don't have... It's my birthday. You shouldn't be ridiculing me on my birthday.
I'm not ridiculing
you. You are. Birthday. Bet Matt Smith doesn't get this on his birthday.
How old are you again?
I don't know.
38?
Somewhere close to 40, somewhere...
But not 39. Not
close enough to 37 anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know.
Well, I do hope that you, and I'm sure my listener does as well, or our listener does as well, that you have a really nice remainder of your birthday.
Thank you. And I'll let you know that the story airing when I was born was Pyramids of Mars.
Was it really?
It was, yeah.
Wow. I'm not sure what it was when I was born.
I remember it clearly.
I can find out for you in a moment, though. In the meantime, I can tell you that at number one in the UK when I was born was a record called Bohemian Rhapsody.
I'm sorry, is this your birthday?
No.
No,
saying,
well
no.
Then you can keep all this.
So, what was at number one when you were born?
I don't
know. Is what I was getting at.
I don't know. I don't listen to popular music. I listen to Kevin McCulloch and his offbeat Doctor Who albums. I don't know. Have a quick look. Editing out mode activated.
Brain of Morbius. No, it wasn't, actually. It wasn't the Brain of Morbius.
What, for me?
No, for me. No, it wasn't.
Oh, right.
Oh, no, it wasn't. It was Android Invasion for me.
Oh, that's...
No, it wasn't that either. Doctor Who wasn't on. It was off for a couple of weeks. So there you go.
Oh, that's a bit of a... That's a bit of a... oh, yes, put the year 1975. That helps.
That helps, doesn't it? Yeah, absolutely.
I better not be David Essex.
Oh, I hope it's Abba.
Oh, ABBA's not that bad. Hang on, October 19th, October the 1st. Art Garfunkel.
Oh, really?
I only have eyes for you. If I'd been born just a week later, I'd have had David Bowie, Space Oddity.
Really?
Yeah.
November the 17th time.
November the 2nd to the 15th, 1975. Yeah, stayed at number one for 2 weeks. Bohemian Rhapsody, yep, November the 23rd, 1975. To January the 24th, 1976, for 9 weeks, was Queen's Bohemian Rhapsody.
Yes. There you go.
There we go.
It's like a Doctor Who adventure of its own.
It is, isn't it? Just like this podcast.
Indeed. Which brings us to the end of this week's Casteris Podcast with a K. I would like to thank James McLean for putting up with me.
And I'd like to thank Brian Terranova for, while he was not here, he couldn't be bothered to come. He did actually send me a nice happy birthday email.
Did he?
Yeah.
That's good of him.
I said to him in my reply, I said I expected a cake. I wanted on the cake was his sonic screwdrivers doused in oil and lit as candles. I said, you can have a few days to weep afterwards. That's fine, but it's all for good cause.
Excellent. And we would like to thank you, dear listener, for hopefully getting involved in this week's podcast. If you have any comments, please send them in. Leave them under the player bit.
If you want to guess how many candles would be on that cake based on how many screwdrivers that Brian owns, and he's not allowed to save one for himself, they've all got to go on there, give us a number. We'll find out if Brian... find out how many Brian would have had to put on there, or has put on there. I hope.
Is there a prize in this?
I don't know. You're the one who gets all the freebies.
No, there's no prize in this one.
Of course, there's no prize in it. It's my birthday. I'm the one who gets the prizes, not you lot.
Dear listener, I hope you'll join with me in saying happy birthday, James McLean.
Matt
Smith. And until next.
Andy and Marta.
Until next time. From a thoroughly embarrassed Christian Corley, it's goodbye. So I think you'll join with me, dear listener, in wishing James a happy birthday.
What are you doing?
I don't know.
You've done the outro. It was fine.
Was it?
Yes, it was fine.
Was it okay, was it? I thought it went wrong personally.
I think it was absolutely fine.
Okay.
Don't worry. They don't care. No one's listening to it anyway.